And welcome to After Hours, All-Star Evening After Hours. Jay Binkley with Nathan Williams producing the operation. No baseball tonight for Big Nate. Can't have Vern. Can't talk baseball. Can't do the problem. Sure, you're ready for baseball right now, but you get the All-Star game at least. You get four Royals All-Stars tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I would say there's baseball on tonight, except it can't Big hurt time. My feelings. I can't go home upset at the offense tonight. What's bad about that?
Do you still get upset at the offense, the Royals offense?
Get upset at myself for thinking that it'll be different.
Yeah, it's a lot of that, man. Insanity, right? They call it doing the same thing, expecting different results. I suffer from it too. Royals offensive-itis, right? We'll get to that in just a second. Second best ERA in all of baseball. Second best ERA in all of baseball, despite the injuries. Lorenzen going on the IL, still waiting on Cole Reagan. Seth Lugo had his issues for a while. He's, obviously fine now. Second in baseball. Rookie from St. Joe coming up and destroying things. Noah Cameron.
Yeah, guy was great the other day.
And just mowing through a $300 million payroll, wasn't he?
And I know this will be a topic later on in the show, but yeah, what this is just such a bummer that you've gotten what you've gotten out of who you've gotten it between Bubich and Cameron, and to be sitting here three games under 500 is just a bummer.
We'll get to Chris Bubich in a second. He obviously is an all-star tonight. Bobby Witt Jr., Chris Bubich, Mikel Garcia, he makes it.
That's right.
I mean, it took some injuries and everything, but he did make it. And your closer, Carlos Estevez, in the game tonight. So four all-stars you can hit. I bet they all play at some point. Mikel, I don't know. Could he come in and pinch hit or whatever? But I think that Estevez will get an inning, and I think Chris Bubich will get an inning.
I think they try to work all the pitchers in, right? And I think
they do.
They'll go through the starters. They'll probably get an inning each and then maybe an out or two per reliever and, try to cycle them all through there. Yeah, I would imagine we see everybody.
Well, Garcia, Bobby's going to get some innings. Bobby's going to get some innings.
Pinch run situation, at least for Garcia, defensive replacement sort of a thing. Yeah, I got to imagine you see all four.
What did you watch Home Run Derby, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Was I booing Jazz Chisholm in my living room like it was 2012 and it was Robinson Cano? Absolutely.
Him and his three home runs.
Absolutely.
Did you enjoy that?
It was great, man.
I had Gene Battaglia from ESPN Rochester. He's at 95.7 The Fan. It's a sister station of ours. Of course, he lost the bet. So for the Bills, because they're a Bills station too. I've betting beer and stuff in the past, but Josh Allen is 0-4 against Mahomes in the postseason. We don't bet in the regular season. Won't do it because they say it doesn't matter. If we make it to the postseason, since we've been going on, I started going on their show when Mahomes was drafted in 2017 because they traded the Bills. So it was a, hey, let's have somebody from Kansas City talk about this. Ha, 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 we got over on them. No, you didn't. And Allen's 0-4 against Mahomes. We bet beer before, like local beer from their area versus I'll send them Boulevard or whatever local from our area. But last year, it's made a deal that we're not your sister station anymore. So don't say, hey, Jay's joining us from our sister station, your daddy station in Kansas City. So Gene came and did a show from the daddy station, right? So I took him to the Mets game. He's a Western New Yorker, so obviously he's a...
Oh, Gene was in town this weekend.
Yeah, Gene was in town.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Gene was in town. So we got to talking a lot about that, and you got to see Bobby at a home run. He Juan Soto was getting booed at every turn, and he goes, why are they booing Juan Soto? Why are they booing Juan Soto and not any other Mets? Because they weren't. I said, because they don't dislike Pete Alonso, whatever. That's kind of Jack's, hero from Florida and everything. And, Jonathan India, a teammate, of Alonso and stuff like that, they don't care. But Juan Soto was a Yankee. So that's why they boo him. Because he in a sports update, he put Jazz Chisholm's been added to the Home Run Derby. And I said, well, people here hate Jazz Chisholm. And he's, why? And I explained to him that Royals got lucky comments and all that. But he's like, you guys just don't like the Yankees. I said, Gene, you're a baseball historian. You love the game of baseball. You know damn well there's Royals and Yankees for years. Kansas City hates the Yankees. And you being a Mets fan should hate them too. But I said I did take your guys back for one reason. When Juan Soto and the Mets played the Yankees, right? Subway Series in New York. In the Bronx. At Yankee Stadium, right? They were booing Juan Soto and had signs and everything else. They're just booing him. And I had their back there. Because Juan I hate to take Juan Soto's back at anything, but I was like, you're booing a dude for you're leaving your team for more money. How many other teams in Major League Baseball have their guys left their team to go play in New York for the Yankees? All of a sudden, it happens to you? Karma's a bitch, man. Karma's a bitch. It just gets you. But anyway, he's a Met, and the Yankees fans are in the fetal position crying. And it's like, what are you doing, man? You've done this to everybody for years, Nathan.
Yeah, and I was not, growing up, privy to the Royals and Yankees rivalries. You always hear about it. You always, I'd go back and watch those series from the late 70s, and you'd see it. But growing up, obviously the Royals were not competitive, and, you know, you'd see a lot of people you know here in Kansas City dress up in Yankees jerseys and be the Fairweather fan and stuff. I love seeing that rivalry come alive starting last year. Outside of the Robinson Cano, Billy Butler drama 13 years ago, there was no reason to hate the Yankees when I was a kid because the Royals weren't competitive. Yeah. And so, you know, last season when they were patting Garcia on the back after rivalry, he was running back to first base, and it's like, hold on. At the time, we forget that how screwed the Royals got in game one of that series last year. I mean, they should have won that game.
They needed ABS, the automatic balls in the strike.
100%. And also the stolen base, where they didn't overturn the stolen base, which, by the way, I guess it happened twice this weekend, so that those calls can be overturned, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, even being a Mets fan, he admitted that was a
bogus.
The reverse side. That was there wasn't conclusive evidence.
No.
Guys pop off the bag all the time. I get that. It's frustrating, man. But you know what? Shortstops and second baseman, third baseman, whatever, they know the deal, man. You keep that glove on that player the entire time.
Sure.
I hate that rule. It's stupid. Once you steal the bag, it ought to be, hey, timeout. You know, he made it. He beat the throw. But that's not the way it is.
Well, wasn't it Jazz that was in game one last year that stole that base but then popped off and it was clear as day and they did not overturn
it? They didn't.
Yankees win game one. Then they're patting Garcia on the back, you know, here at Kauffman Stadium. And it's like, hold on, it should be 2-0 Royals in this series. You guys got bailed out and you're going to little bro Mikel Garcia?
I think a lot of people, Nathan, don't realize the Royals had the highest payroll in the late 80s, man. They did. Before your time. They had the highest payroll in baseball in 1989. The highest. Then what happened? The explosion of cable television, right? Television dollars went into teams' pockets where they could pay their team. And then you look at the Royals. What did they have? A $20 million TV contract and they won the World Series? Yeah. I mean, it was a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and so for years they couldn't compete with the Yankees, and so I'm glad to see it back. And then it continued this summer with the whole I'm going to smack him thing when he slid into third base and Garcia tried to tag him. The most innocent thing ever.
Innocent. Okay, that was completely...
So, Bink, I guess...
Crying. That was... He turned into Karen for a second.
100%. But also, I think the threat doesn't hold nearly as large. It probably doesn't hurt that bad to get smacked by him after what I watched last night. It was a joy to watch him struggle to get three home runs out.
Yeah,
a complete joy.
And he had Aaron Boone beforehand. Who's your guy? He goes, oh, Jazz Chisholm, man. He's ready. He's ready for tonight. Of course, he's going to take his Yankees guys back. But it's like, oh, go Jazz, man. We'll go Jazz. But regardless, we'll get to that stuff in just a second. We'll keep you updated on the All-Star game. By the way, I mentioned ABS, the automatic balls and strikes. That will be implemented in this game. It's still the one misconception. It's still human beings behind the plate calling balls and strikes. Now, the catcher, the pitcher, or the hitter can tap their helmet, but they got to do it quick. As soon as the pitch is made, they get two challenges per game. And I think if you get one right, you get a third. Isn't that the way it works?
That's what I understand as well. Yeah, it's the quick challenge system, tapping it on your head. And from what I understand, now I have not been to a minor league game where this is implemented yet, but it's, think of tennis, where you look up on the scoreboard and they can show you electronically where the ball hit. Was it in the line or outside of the line? Sort of the same thing, and then the game gets back to action, if I'm not mistaken. I could not be more for this. As we just talked about game one of the ALDS last year, I could not be more for this ABS system. And I'm excited to watch it play out tonight. And Bink, this is how they unveiled the pitch clock and the 10th inning, you know, ghost runner rule a few years ago. This is coming sooner rather than later.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they have it next year. If it's already in the All-Star game this year, it'll be there. Now, do you still like the human beings? Because the whole robo-ump thing is kind of out of the window now. I mean, now it's just a two challenge. But how many balls and strikes? I mean, you could challenge like 50 of those things in a game the way these umpires work, but just doing two?
It's a two-pronged question.
Is that enough? No.
I've got differentiating views on it because where we are today in today's game, yes, I'm for eliminating the human aspect. In general, I wish we could put the cat back in the bag and just not have replay at all, altogether, and just eliminate this whole, we review every, minute detail of every single play. And it's across all sports now. It's, you know, basketball, football, the end of every game is just so drawn out by these reviews. And like we talked about Bobby Witt Jr. being called out the other day, it's just so against the spirit of the rule as well. So I would rather have a human make a mistake once or twice a game and just live with it and move on. Instead of whining and complaining and trying to, you know,
like I can see the umpires being back there still for balk calls, for the swing or not type deals, or the plays at home plate, because they're still going to be there. I mean, they're still going to have a job. You know, there's still going to be that rotation. The automatic balls and strikes, like just letting the computer, I'm 100% for that. I get it. They're still going to be behind it. But man, we'll say you get two challenges per game. If you get them right, you still get those two. So you still retain them. Now, we all know it's more than two per game for balls and strikes. So what do you got to do? Wait till a real crucial situation to do it? Maybe so. Bases loaded. You're the second out. There's already two outs on there. You're the third out coming up. Maybe that's when you use them, just to be 100% accurate. But you better be right, because you don't want to blow them.
Yeah, you know, and I know you've got some O'Neal Cruz thoughts for later on tonight as well. We were talking about him in the bullpen. Wait for the first instance of a guy like that, you know, using these reviews up too early on pitches that don't matter. And then, you know, getting benched or something, getting in trouble because the manager says you're not allowed to challenge that, and he does anyway or whatever. You know, that's going to add a new layer to the game, if you will.
But the story of the day, it was crunch time for Trey Smith's contract. Had to be done by 3 o'clock Central today. He was one of two guys tagged in the NFL. The other was T. Higgins. We know the Bengals, which we cannot figure out what the Bengals ever do. What'd they do, Nathan? They paid T. Higgins all that money, and Trey Hendrickson is whining and crying, worse than Jazz Chisholm, to be honest with you, about getting a new deal with Cincinnati, although he has a deal, but he wants more money, and I get it. Their defense sucked. They need Trey Hendrickson. Then they go out and draft Shamar Stewart on defense too, in the first round. Now he's back practicing at A&M. Then the thought is, can he go back to Texas A&M and practice all year? He's practicing with the team. The thing is, the NCAA rules say, once you're drafted, you can't play. Now, can this stuff be challenged in court? I'm sure it can, because now, with name, image, and likeness, and getting paid, everything is opened up and everything has changed. So, can Shamar Stewart bend the rule going back? We'll see what happens, because now guys can get paid doing that. This will be very interesting for the National Football League. It's very interesting to watch what happens to him as far as the NFL draft is concerned. But, you know, how about those Bengals, man? First-round pick on defense? Man, I didn't even play for him this year. That's good for the Chiefs. But Ian Rappaport, of course, one of the many that reported on Trey Smith's contract. Nate Taylor was on. New ESPN reporter, Nate Taylor, was on with Carrington earlier. But here was Ian Rappaport kind of breaking that news.
Trey Smith, a huge deal for him, was set to play more than $23 million in the franchise tag. Instead, he gets a deal, 4 years, $94 million. That is $23.5 million per year, the highest paid guard in the NFL, in this deal done by Tory Dandy and Jimmy Sexton of CAA. He gets $70 million in guaranteed. $70 million, which, if you're wondering why Patrick Mahomes was tweeting a smiley face emoji, this is why. Trey Smith is one of the best guards in the NFL. Now they have locked up some huge, huge parts of the team. Creed Humphrey, highest paid center. Trey Smith, highest paid guard. A big, big day for the Kansas City Chiefs.
We'll talk about that in just a second, Nathan. That was the Interrapport there on NFL Network. But the salary cap in the NFL is going up to $279 million. The Chiefs thought it was going to be $270 million. So that was about $9 million more than they thought they would have. So certainly that helps out in a Trey Smith contract type situation. Of course, it'd be Trent McDuffie the following year and George Karlaftis, same draft that those guys came out of. So that's probably next for the Kansas City Chiefs, if that's the direction they go. But I want to talk about Trey Smith deal, what it means for the Chiefs, and why I'm not surprised they got this deal done. Because I'll be honest with you, Trey Smith probably left money on the table by not playing on the franchise tag and then just going to free agency next year, because he's still the highest paid in the game. Put him in even a higher paid player in the game, because you know how things work. He signs his deal, somebody else will sign theirs, and all of a sudden he's the fourth highest paid player at his position in the NFL, just the way things work. We'll discuss that more when we come back. Oh, man. I just had to mess with Cooney Gold's producer, Drew Nixon, on this. Because there's loopholes, right? I mean, if he plays at A&M, there's loopholes. But technically, he's can re-enter the draft, and the Bengals would not be able to draft him despite what people think.
Hold on, back up. You're giving Drew a hard time? Is that what I heard?
I am.
Yeah. Yeah. Color me shocked.
Because that would be all-time epic fail for a team needing to help their draft stock, right? If they drafted somebody in the first round and he can't play for him, that'd be funny. I mean,
it just screams.
That's another good Chiefs move, isn't it?
It is. It screams another 8-win season. It screams Zach Taylor getting fired at the end of the season. It just screams dysfunction out of Cincinnati.
Says if Stewart doesn't sign his contract and he doesn't play football at all in 25, again, this could really change the landscape of NFL. Because now guys can go back to college and get paid, right? So now there's that option, but he can't play. But we'll see if he challenges the court system and they rule that way, he could. But this would totally change the NFL. If he went this route, it means that any team could draft him next year except for the Bengals. So if he goes back in it, they can't get him. Sorry, Bengals, you're out. Couldn't happen to a better team.
You're right. It would change the landscape of the league.
Totally. Wouldn't because now you can get money. If someone, big money booster might say, you know what? You were drafted, 23rd, 24th overall. You come back for a year, here's $2 million. Here's $3 million to come back for one year.
But what if a...
But right now you can't. Right now you can't.
What if a similarly dysfunctional team, what if the Browns pick him in the second next year? Now he doesn't have the fifth-year option. His guaranteed money is a lot less. He still has to deal with a place he doesn't want to be. All for a little bit of money on the front end, sure. But I don't know. I'm not sure. You're right. It would change things. But is this really at his advantage?
He's 21. If he was 23, 24, 25, he'd played all those years, plus had that free year that he was playing, and then all of a sudden age becomes different. But when you're 21, you can't hold the cards.
Does the league, would the owners collectively, exile someone like that, instead of changing the landscape? You know what I mean? Would they get together and say, we're not going to draft a guy who's going to opt out and refuse to go play for the team? Not in the way of
big question
Eli Manning did, but... This is sort of this new name, image, and likeness sort of leverage that Shamar Stewart might be trying to use. I wonder if the owners don't get together and say, no thanks.
100%. But Trey Smith with the Chiefs, here's the thing I looked at this, Nathan. I always thought he would sign with the Chiefs because there's certain things that, company guys, right? Company guys are what all companies want, right? Because they're going to do something for the good of the company, right? You're going to have loyalty. You're going to stay when maybe you can go make less or more money somewhere else. But you're always going to show up to work. You're not going to be one of those people just calling in, 5 minutes before work saying, I can't make it. That's not a company guy, right? Company guy might get offers from all these other places, but he's going to stay with his company because of undying loyalty.
You're a company guy.
That's fine. Company guy. Okay. That's fine. I think you are. In your life, you too, the morals you have. But the bottom line is, Trey Smith, to me, company dude. He was drafted in the sixth round. All teams passed on him for five rounds, including the Chiefs. They get him in the sixth. He had the health concerns coming out of Tennessee. He was slotted to be a first or second round guy. As I mentioned before, he actually had the draft hat when it was on because they were expecting him to go way before he did. So he's loyal to the Chiefs. Won a couple Super Bowl rings. Life is good. He got to play next to Creed Humphrey. They became buds, right? They were the stalwarts of that offensive line. And the Chiefs, in turn, make him the highest paid guard in the National Football League, which, to be honest with you, did kind of save the Chiefs money because he could have played on a tag if he wanted to play hardball. But I knew this thing was coming to a head when, I know this is silly, but the Hallmark movie last year? Guess who was in it? Guess who one of the few Chiefs was in it was? Trey Smith.
Yeah.
So Trey Smith was in that. He goes to the charity events. Like, he goes down with Mitch Holtis, the Smith Center, and stuff like that. Like,
oh, yeah.
He's a community dude.
Yeah, even before my time here at the station, I saw Trey Smith multiple times in public, with dealings with his foundation at, Royals games, just walking around in the crowd, just regular Joe sitting in the seats, taking pictures, talking to people. The guy loves the community.
No, he does. He's a community dude. He likes guarding Patrick Mahomes. I mean, he likes playing with Andy Reid. He likes the organization. And not only that, when minicamp was here, mandatory minicamp. Now, we've seen these guys that are tagged skip that all the time. Yeah, they're going to pay something, but typically that is absorbed by the team, ends up giving them more in the contract. They pay the fees. They don't pay crap. to be honest with you. They just don't. But guess who showed up? Trey Smith. Guess who wore the uniform? Trey Smith. Guess who, you know, was part of the Chiefs media, you know, blitz and stuff like that? Trey Smith. So am I shocked to still get that? Absolutely, 100% not. You knew it was going to happen. They weren't going to let him go when they're trying to rebuild their offensive line. But I'll say this, though. I mean, it's great. He has made the Pro Bowl, which that is minuscule compared to the All-Pro. All-Pro is the toughest one because that encompasses both leagues. Creed Humphrey was All-Pro. Joe Tooney, first-team All-Pro. See, to me, that's better than the Pro Bowl, and it should be to anybody because anybody makes the Pro Bowl. I mean, Derek Carr was rocking the Pro Bowl all the time when he was with the Raiders. It just happens. But he wasn't All-Pro. But Nick, can he be? I think so. I think sometimes that stuff is some guys get in the club, and Trey Smith deserves to be in that club because he was good. To me, he's one of the most devastating blockers I've seen with the Chiefs in a long time. But now you have him, and now you got Creed Humphrey. And you did have Joe Tooney, which is now in Chicago, and you still couldn't run on 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. See, that's still the part that bothers me, that you have these linemen that are so good. You had 2 first-team All-Pros and a Pro Bowler, sending your offensive line. That ought to be Swiss cheese with those guys out there making a yard for somebody.
Yeah.
That's the part that's hard to put your finger around because that just shows you how important that left tackle is.
Well, it is.
That just shows you how important that right and left tackle, Juwan Taylor and your left tackle, because your interior part of your offensive line, really no other team in the National Football League can boast having 3 all-pro quality offensive linemen, but then that's why the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl.
I'd say even the current iteration of the offensive line, you know, yes, you're using the finesse and the wisdom, or excuse me, you're losing the finesse and the wisdom of Joe Tooney. So I'm not arguing that this offensive line is better. But even if, let's say it's Simmons and Kingsley on the left side of that line, if they don't reach their full potential, they ought to be better at outmassing the opponent this year, right? Like, these are big dudes. These are big dudes. I mean, Juwan Taylor obviously is a big guy as well. He's not a mauler. But I mean, Simmons, Kingsley, Creed, Trey, there's a lot of just mass on that offensive line. Well, you better be able to run the ball on 3rd-and-short.
And Taylor ended up playing okay outside the penalties. The penalties more than anybody in the NFL in the last 2 years. That part, like not lining up correctly, that's got to stop, man. That's got to stop. But left tackle just shows you how important that was. Now, Tooney was admirable at that position because he's an all-pro guard, but he's a guard. That's his position, guard, not tackle. There's a reason why he's a guard. He had shorter arms. And all these people wanted Joe Tooney to play tackle. I was like, caution it, because good pass rushers will exploit shorter arms. As geeky as this sounds, I know I'm a draft geek and stuff like that, but a couple inches in your arms does make a difference, man. It's why Andy Reid's 34 1/4-inch arms, like who has ever drafted, has been that. So it's like been important to him. And Joe Tooney filled in great down the stretch, but again, he was playing tackle and did a decent job at it until the Super Bowl, when the Eagles manhandled the Chiefs line, completely manhandled. They didn't even blitz, and they got the Mahomes and made his life hell that game.
Yeah, and I mean, well, Tooney, for what he is, a left guard, I think played admirably down the stretch as well.
He did.
I totally agree with you. And not even in the playoffs, but before that, the guys he went up against in the regular season were Myles Garrett, Will Anderson, and T.J. Watt in 3 straight weeks. So the guy just went up against the best of the best for his 6 or 7 games at left tackle. Look, Juwan Taylor outside of the penalties, which you can't take those out of his game. I'm not the biggest critique of Juwan Taylor. I know a lot of the text line and Chiefs Twitter isn't the biggest fan of his because of those penalties. But
he's all right.
The guy's an average tackle that was overpaid, and I think you can live with stuff like that.
And sometimes you got to overpay people. And, you know, the Chiefs have had this, you know, rotating at left tackle. I mean, they've been somebody different all the Super Bowls. And I'm not even – I mean, Orlando Brown was fine, right? Was he the best? No. Did he have his problems? Yes. But they didn't have any other options. Because when it got Orlando Brown, it was during COVID, right? Like, none of these tackles were good their last year in college because they ended up being guards and moved to the other side in the NFL. So they were overhyped because COVID. The Chiefs knew that. And, like, we want Trent Williams. And they tried to get Trent Williams till 2 o'clock in the morning. Didn't work out. Hey, Baltimore, which is the biggest shock why one of your rivals would help you out like the Bills did with Mahomes. But they did. The Ravens and the Bills helped the Chiefs out. They helped them get a ring. And with Mahomes, it's been more than just one ring. That's because of the Bills and the Ravens, which is insanity, because the Chiefs would never help out another team like that, but regardless, they did. But anyway, that's why left tackle remains so important. When we come back, I want to look at the Royals All-Stars a little bit and talk about kind of some of the festivities. We have the game coming on in just a little bit. Well, not here, but we'll talk about it while it's on. And the Home Run Derby and everything else, because Nathan and I do like All-Star Week. We'll talk about that next. But a couple inches does make a difference, man. And welcome back to After Hours, Jay Binkley. Nathan Williams producing the operation. Paul Skeens getting to get a second start tonight. Are you glad that MLB returned to the actual uniforms so they're not wearing the silly things that MLB had them wear the last couple of years to sell them? They wear them during Home Run Derby and all that, but they're back to their real uniforms.
I guess I was living under a rock, Bink, because I was in here with Logan a few weeks ago doing one of the daytime shows, and we were talking about ways to make the All-Star game better, and I mentioned, you know, uniforms, and the text line blew up and said, where have you been? They're bringing them back this year. And I was ecstatic the rest of the day. So, yeah, I can't wait to see. You know, I don't know if you're on like TikTok or Instagram or any of the social media sites where you can just scroll through videos, and my algorithm's full of just like trivia or just clips of like, hey, name the 2008 All-Star lineup, you know, and I'll sit there and I'll watch them go through and just relive my childhood as they go down the first and third base line, you know, panning through the All-Stars in their different uniforms. It used to have a lot more pageantry to it. And I wonder, you know, part of that's being a kid, but some of that is also, I think, you know, to do with the uniforms. I'm excited that it's that they've gone back. But Paul Skeens, you said, I can't get enough of the guy. 43 career starts. He's got a sub-2 ERA.
Ready to get to see him in Kansas City.
People, I know, which helps the Royals, right? Because they struggle. I mean, I know they swept Pittsburgh, but boy,
no, it does. If that's
boy,
the intention, Pittsburgh pushed them to the edge. We don't need to have our good starter go against the Royals because they're not going to hit him anyway.
Right, but I think people are underselling how good the guy's been, as crazy as that sounds. So, two ERA, 43 starts into his career.
He's been fun. It's a shame watching him kind of waste his time with that team. Second straight All-Star start for Paul. Is this your favorite All-Star game of the group? Did you like it better when there was something on the line, or do you think it's still great without something on the line? Because the guy's still treated the same.
I don't think anything being on the line matters. And I think it's the only All-Star game that I watch. Not that I watch it closely. And I do like the Big Four. I do like what hockey did this last year with their All-Star format. But I guess by default, it's probably my favorite All-Star game. I think that's fair.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, the NFL has become, as much as I like it, I mean, the flag football game, it's stupid. They've been doing the last couple of years. I'm not a fan of the flag football in the NFL. The hockey All-Star game is awesome when you have the 3-on-3 and whatever, and you have different. And last year was much better because it was USA versus Canada.
Right. Yeah.
That kind of replaced.
It outdrew the Stanley Cup
All-Star
finals.
Game. Yeah.
And it was very successful.
That was like that format there. I loved it. I think that was actually the best. But the All-Star game is something about it. Even if there's nothing on the line. I mean, it's still a huge honor to go. These guys love going.
I will say the Pro Bowl used to be, I mean, the game itself hasn't been great since Sean Taylor was laying the boomstick down 20 years ago now in that game. But I used to like the skills competitions and stuff growing up in the Pro Bowl, and all of that stuff's gotten worse too. I think the players used to really, you know, try at those things. But I haven't watched a Pro Bowl weekend or a Pro Bowl game in probably 5 years. I mean,
NBA All-Star game sucks. You know that. The skills competition is still best, but none of the good ones.
I don't even watch the dunk contest anymore.
Well, they have a G League guy that's won it the last couple of years as far as a slam dunk is considered. Right. And, I mean, it's great when it was, Dominic Wilkins or, you know, Jordan or any of those guys, you know, competing in it. But it's not. And then the game's watered out. The NHL, when they have the All-Star game, the skills contest is cool. Hardest shot. Those kind of things. Yeah. I mean, that's the NHL, I think, does a great job in that. When they're doing 3-on-3 divisional, you know, single elimination format, that was cool. But this USA versus Canada was a ton of fun. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it was awesome. But the baseball's still fun. And it starts yesterday with the Home Run Derby. A lot of people got tired of Chris Berman with the back stuff that he was doing. And it became overplayed. They sped it up to some extent. With pitch counts and everything else, throw a time limit and or 40 pitches that you see. And It's not that head-to-head stuff in the first round, you know, where guys would be knocked out when you might have 28 home runs and the guy you're playing has 30 and you're knocked out, even though your total was more than anybody else's. You know, that always sucked when those guys would lose on that deal, Nathan.
Yeah.
But having McAfee do the introductions, like, he was into it, man. That was WWE-style introduction. When he called Cal Raleigh the biggest ass in baseball, the big dumper. I mean, he gave two Fs about everything. It was just awesome.
Biggest ass in baseball is Jazz Chisholm, not Cal Raleigh.
Didn't he say that about Raleigh?
No, he did. I'm just giving you a hard time.
Oh,
you mean the physical dumper? Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I don't know the pageantry, you know, and they used to do like concerts and stuff before the Home Run Derby. I can sort of skip all that stuff. I thought the intros were cool, but man, I think the home run. I still enjoy the Home Run Derby. Watch it every year. I think I want the time clock to go away, and I think the sport has won. I just don't like the players huffing and puffing and running out of energy, and I want to see them, you know, perform to their fullest potential without the event taking 5 hours like it used to.
I'm just glad some of the stars actually do it.
Right. And I think
not all of them, because Ohtani and Judge aren't.
Judge needs to do it eventually since he's gotten to the height of what he's become.
Griffey won the thing 3 times.
Ohtani did it. Ohtani was incredible the year
he
did it.
Yeah, but Griffey won 3 times.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think this pitch limit is the answer. I think you take away the clock and leave the pitch limit. So there's still more time in between pitches, but you can limit how much, you know, how many pitches they're taking.
I just think the whole thing was cool. I like that. I like baseball's kind of shifting to market their stars. You know, that whole Wittizens thing, you know, that Cody and Gold did and stuff.
They did a great job.
You know, that was in collaboration with Major League Baseball and the Kansas City Royals. I mean, MLB put it on their social media accounts, you know, this Bobby Witt Jr. lookalike and how much he looked like him, because he did. It was incredible. But they're trying to market their stars, because that was a whiff that Bobby Witt didn't start in the All-Star game. It's not starting in tonight's All-Star game. Jacob Wilson is. Jacob Wilson's a great story with the A's. I mean, but only his average. The rest of it, Bobby Witt's better at him and everything. But for some reason, I can't explain how Wilson got the votes either, because you're playing in Sacramento. Like, I don't know how he did it, but I'll say this. I don't know if you saw the interview with him. He couldn't wait to meet Bobby Witt Jr. Like, that was the one dude he wanted to meet, was the guy that was playing his position.
Yeah, I think if Jacob Wilson's starting the All-Star game, so should Michael Garcia have gotten voted in, right, if we're just looking at batting average. But, I think the...
But at least the commissioner got it right and put him in.
Right. I like the fact that a guy that does not play in a city, that does not have a home, that does not have a logo tied to his name, doesn't have a big fan base following him. I like that he's starting the All-Star game for the game of baseball.
The young stars. It's about the young stars. And Jacob Mizorowski, the local kid from Blue Springs, played at Green Valley High School. Is a fireballer. If you haven't seen this guy, he's got like 5 starts. I mean, he's not gone against Kershaw. He's not gone against Skeens. He's gone against the best and beat him. And he gets added to the All-Star game, right? After 5 starts. And this is not a baseball-esque move, right? This is a new age move for baseball doing this, because Stewart didn't make it for the Phillies, right? And the Phillies started crying about the whole situation. They started crying about it. Trey Turner was crying about it. He said he didn't deserve to go, blah, blah, blah. Our guy deserved to go. I understand you have your guys back, which, let's be honest, I mean, they do have grounds to complain, because in this situation, as far as Philly is concerned, you know, as far as Christopher Sanchez, it was Sanchez they wanted to go. He's 8-2 with a great ERA.
Trey Turner's correct.
He's correct.
He's correct. It's just unprofessional.
But Sanchez, Major League Baseball says they invited him. They invited him to go. Sanchez says no. So that's a he said, she said going on, right? But the problem is he pitched Sunday, so he wouldn't have pitched tonight. So
yeah, from what you and I discussed in the bullpen, this was a situation in which the league offered him the opportunity to come to the game. But there's a rule that you can't pitch with only one day of rest, so it eliminates anyone from pitching on Sunday. And he was slated to pitch on Sunday, and he said, I'm not going to come and pitch. I'm not going to waive the rule. But I still want, you know, the All-Star monitor next to my name on Baseball Reference, essentially. And the league said, no, we want someone that'll pitch.
He's got a bonus. The Phillies activated the bonus.
And the money, right, which the team gave him as well.
Which the team doesn't give him the money, I don't think, unless Major League Baseball was going to invite him anyway, right? Because then he would have been an all-star. So
yeah.
Regardless, he says he wasn't invited, but I think he was.
So I just think they're whining about nothing, man. And they're not playing extremely well right now either. So it's a little bit of that frustration tied into it as well.
But what do people want to see, right? Do they want to see a guy throw 102 and 103 against some of the best hitters in the game? Yeah, it's a short sample size, but you know what? The thing is, who do people want to see? Who is the next stars that people are going to buy the jerseys of? Who do you want Major League Baseball to shine? I mean, the ratings are up. People are going to the games. Like, this is what you want. Now, you don't want that stall out in a couple of years for another strike by baseball that could happen. When's that supposed to happen? Like 2030, something like that?
2027, baby.
2027. Yeah, 2027 next CBA for baseball. So it's coming
up. We're a year and a half away from that.
It's coming up. But you want the young stars to be promoted. And I'd rather watch this kid throw 102, 103. And it looks like Sanchez was invited to the game, so I say big deal.
Baseball's doing better at a lot of things, including marketing its young players. And yeah, Mizrowski should be in the All-Star game if you're looking at it from the lens of, hey, we have the opportunity to put a guy from Milwaukee who notoriously does not have a whole lot of marketable players come through their system. Milwaukee's a great team. People don't think of the Milwaukee Brewers when you think of baseball. So we want to get him on a national level. And I understand that. And I'm a huge fan of Rob Manfred, and I think that's becoming a more popular take the last couple of years.
He's doing a great job.
He's made a lot of changes that are making the game more relatable.
The pitch clock sped things up. That's what people wanted, right? They fast clock, food society. Everybody wants fast food. You want to open your garage door with your cell phone. I mean, they've adapted to that.
Even instant gratification aside, I genuinely enjoy watching the game now more with the pitch clock, and you don't even notice it. I think it's the greatest rule change any sport's made in my lifetime, and I don't think it's close. I mean, in attendance on a local level has been up the last few years as well.
Put the base runner on second in the extra innings. I mean, these are non-traditional things.
You've seen in Denver, they're averaging over 30,000 fans a night this year, and they're on pace to win like 55 games or less.
And the White Sox beat them 2 out of 3 there, and the White Sox are the second worst team in baseball.
What a horrid series that is. No, avoiding this strike in 2 years is going to be a big, big deal. But no, in terms of the All-Star game, I've got no problem with Mizrowski getting in. I think that's the way you need to market your players.
Well, they're doing a better job. There's certain things they can change. Obviously, now that every team's playing every team, which I think is awesome, so you can sit in Kansas City and you don't have to wait for interleague play in the division that you're going to play and maybe see so teams 1 year and then see them again in 4 years. Now you get to see everybody. I think that's a huge thing for the game, which means you can pit the World Series teams against each other in the opening series if you want. You know, NFL does a big deal, but having the former champion on Thursday night, not necessarily playing who they played the previous year, but that's a big deal. Having the banner being lowered and the team won the Super Bowl on Thursday night. Major League Baseball doesn't need to start in Japan when other teams are in spring training like they did this year. Like, they don't need to do that at 6 a.m. in the morning.
And I think it's also a disadvantage to them to release the schedule in July or August every year, I think. And I wonder if that's another change that comes in the next few seasons now that interleague play is more common. You play every team every season now, is that you wait until after the playoffs are over to release that schedule to get more favorable matchups on certain weekends. And you try to pace the schedule around, you know, I know they've tried to do like the players weekend where you have the names on the jerseys and you can use different bats or they have rivalry weekends or whatever.
You can use playoff rematches.
Yeah, you see more creative scheduling like that going forward. I'm sure that's on the horizon.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Anyway, I am going to get to some Chiefs takes here in just a little bit. The All-Star game starts in a bit, but I do want to kind of talk about the Royals and where they sit right now, what you think about them, what I think about them, and are they wasting this pitching staff? Because I think they are. 913-586-7965 is the phone number. It's also the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Nathan Williams. They just introduced the Royals All-Stars.
All four of them.
As you pause to watch the Royals All-Stars. Out of all those All-Stars, who are you most proud of being there?
Oh, man.
We're talking about Witt, Bubich, Carlos, and Mikel.
Got to be Bubich, I think. Based from an organizational perspective on what that draft class that he was in, what it's ended up meaning to the organization, and how much, you know, hate fans gave the organization when it looked like that class was going to fail. but then also the injury he comes back from. I think it's Chris Bubich with Mikel Garcia not too far behind.
I think it's Chris for me, because you look at this pitching staff and you think, all right, they're only going to be as good as guys like Bubich and Lorenzen. You know, Kerry, you know, Seth Lugo. I mean, just talking about going into the season. I know Cole Reagan's been hurt and all that, but you're thinking, all right, you got number two and number four in the AL Cy Young, you know, voting last year, and Lugo and Reagan's. You're thinking, well, you're only as good as the back end of that of your starters. And here you get with Bubich being named. He's, you know, every single Royal starter now, besides Noah Cameron, because, well, he's the rookie and got called up. But every single member that started in the rotation to begin this year, they're all-stars now. Now that Bubich has made it, they've all made an all-star game. I mean, we forget Lorenzen wants to be a no-hitter.
Yeah, and then I guess early returns on Noah Cameron's career would lead you to believe that he's probably not far behind him in terms of making one in the future, right?
That was my guy on Vern's show this week. Give me six strikeouts and Bubich.
You won me some money on the over
plus 200, man. Let's go. Let's go. I happened to be in St. Joe at that moment. I was like, I have to go with St. Joe, dude, right? Not that I wouldn't go with Royals pitchers anyway, because they're the only people I trust at this point. So why would you go against pitching? I mean, you want to go hitting. I mean, I love to go hitting and two hits or home run or stolen base. But can you imagine had it been Bobby Witt Jr. in a stolen base Saturday and then see what happened? I mean, that would have been like a plus 340, I think. 340 or 360, probably. Bobby Witt Jr. was to have a stolen base Saturday. Can you imagine had that been yanked? I mean, seriously, the whole gambling aspect of things. Can you imagine had that worked? But you look at the Royals right now, we're at the break, and I know we've played more games in the first half than second half will be truncated. I will say this, though. You see the Royals' strength of schedule is like second easiest in baseball. But as a team, they're number two in all of Major League Baseball in the ERA. Number two. That means they're number two in the AL because Texas is ahead of them. Just the starters. You take everything out, just the starters. Third in Major League Baseball, two in the AL. Just the relievers, number nine in Major League Baseball, but number five in the American League. Translation, Nathan, that is a pitching staff. You get them in a short series in the postseason, they can win. That is a staff that can win in the postseason. Right there. You have half of what you need to win a championship. And that's the frustrating part about it.
I think the scariest thing for me, and you know, I'm not saying this team is going to turn it around or is not, but there is definitely a vision of the rest of the season in my mind in which the team comes out of the break and doesn't perform very well.
They get the Marlins off the bat. That's good.
And I think they'll be sitting right at or maybe a game under 500 at the All-Star break at the trade deadline, based on some of the matchups they get early on. But if they don't, you know, and if they fall a few games more below 500, there's a situation in my mind where it's like, okay, maybe they take things even slower on Reagan's. I know they're being very, cautious with him. You know, maybe they get rid of a Seth Lugo. Lorenzen's heading to the IL. And then it's like, okay, what about these young arms with Bubich and Cameron? You're maybe not, you know, using them to their fullest extent, you know, if the season gets a little bit out of hand. And then you look up at the end of the year, the bullpen's more taxed. You're using guys like Keuchel and Rich Hill, and all of a sudden they're a middle-of-the-pack ERA team because, you know, things kind of folded down the stretch, and then we forget historically how good this rotation was before the break.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's kind of a scary thought.
It's a window of opportunity for me. You look at sports and the windows. I mean, I use San Francisco, you know, as an example, right? They didn't cash in. They got close, but they didn't cash in not paying Brock Purdy, right? You're paying him seventh round, last pick in the draft money. So you can afford to pay other players that, right? What happened this year? Brock Purdy gets a big contract, right? Well, guess what? That starts taking away money you can pay for other people. Deebo Samuel jettisoned to Washington, and you could say they lost that window. We see windows all the time close. Teams that win the Super Bowl, then they suck. Like the Rams win with Stafford, then boom, they suck. The Bengals go Super Bowl with Burrow. They didn't cash in going forward. You know, they turned around and looked bad. I mean, we see this time in and time out with teams. Buccaneers didn't cash in once they won with Brady. I mean, we see so many teams lose that window. The Chiefs, credit them, seven straight AFC title games, five Super Bowls in those 7 years, they cash in. These other teams don't. I'm just looking at the Royals. And yeah, they were sitting 3.5 back from the wild card. Now they're 4.5 back. And you got the Angels in front of them with 4. You got the Twins ahead of them with 4. And I don't like the Twins and what they're doing because I can see the Twins completely falling apart. Cleveland already has, by the way. The wheels have come off Cleveland. Then you got the Rangers, 3.5 back with the great pitching staff. Tampa sitting 1.5 back. And right now the Yankees, Red Sox, and Mariners with the 3 wild cards. The 3 wild cards, that has created so much confusion with teams on whether to sell or not because they think they're in it because conceivably – really, all teams but 2 in the American League are technically out of it with the A's and the White Sox. But these wild cards do matter. A couple years ago, you realize when the Rangers played the D-backs, the Rangers were the 2nd wild card. The D-backs were the 3rd wild card 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the Rangers 1 game separated from being the 3rd wild card. So, like, I don't want to hear this. Well, who cares? They'd be the 3rd wild card. Well, 3rd wild card was the World Series 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah. I digress.
Well, and I do know that we want to have more of a buy or sell conversation on the other side.
Sure.
But Pink, I've got, like, this is what I was talking about earlier. We had Kane Brown do a little performance, and now we have the reserves of the All-Star team standing on a platform next to Ludacris as he performs at, like, 2nd base on the infield.
Okay.
Do we need this? Do we have to have this?
It's too much show here. We talk about going to youth and stuff like that, but maybe that's what they're trying to do, man.
There's
maybe
just a
that's
bunch what of old people standing in the crowds with their phones recording Ludacris hundreds of feet away as Vladimir Guerrero Jr. walks out on the red car. I don't know.
We'll get back
off my lawn, I guess.
We'll get back to baseball, but there was this great poll about quarterbacks where the ESPN does this every year where they look at executives and scouts and everything and they rate quarterbacks. Because you know what? It doesn't really matter what the media and the Dan Orlovskys of the world say about quarterbacks. But it does matter what NFL teams say about quarterbacks. Where does Mahomes end up on this? Talk about that next.